Con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un sausage burrito es solo $1.50. Así que échale salsa picante o ketchup a tu sausage burrito con todo en McDonald's. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hour number two of three live right here on this Monday on the early line on Sports Grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. Welcome to hour number two. Still two more hours to go up until 11 a.m. Eastern time. DRS, here we go around college football. Weekend number five now in the books. We are on to October in CFB. And let's dive right in. An SEC shootout in the Grove on Saturday evening between 20th-ranked Ole Miss, no longer number 20 in the country, and 13th ranked LSU. DRS, we build it as a virtual elimination game for both sides. If the Running Rams lost at home against LSU, it would have been their second conference loss in the SEC, specifically within the SEC West Division, probably eliminating them from competition in terms of that conference championship. For LSU, it would have been the second loss of the year for the Bayou Bengals. We have never seen a two-loss team reach the college football playoff, eliminating them from contention for the CFP. And Donnie, it is that second loss of the year for the Tigers. Ole Miss wins 55-49. 55-49, DRS, 104 total points as the Running Rebs win outright as a 2.5-point underdog in Oxford on Saturday night.
When did the SEC turn into the Big 12? That's where I want to know here. 55-49. That sounds like six games combined for these two teams that used to play in their 10-3 and 10-6 struggles back in the early 2000s in the SEC. But my goodness, it was whoever had the ball last, and also LSU. Pick up a couple first downs late in the game, salt this game away, and you see what Ole Miss was able to do. Yeah. Judkins, 33 carries for 177 yards. You had quarterbacks throwing for 400-plus yards. It was a lot of fun to watch it if you had prop bets in a total. Sensational stuff, but the SEC defense is no more. And you just took a look at, you know, Brian Kelly's post-game press conference. Basically, like, I have no more words here. Yeah, the season's not over. We're going to fight. Oh, no. Your season is over because you couldn't with that offense, you can't play a little bit of defense. And this is, we're talking about LSU, one of the most staunch defensing teams, what, of the past 20 years in SEC football? Five stars all over the place. Get it together.
Certainly so. We welcome in our Sports Grid radio audience here. Hour number two of three live on the early line on this Monday. He's Donnie Wrightside. I'm Ben Stevens. You're listening on Sirius XM channel 159. All of our radio terrestrial affiliates now in the fold as well. Brian Kelly likes to pass judgment, maybe give out and deliberate when it comes to placing some of the blame. He's very good at that, DRS. He never really takes onus for the issues of which he is the head coach of a football program. And frankly, LSU's defense has been miserable the last 2 weeks. They gave up 432 total yards, escaping with a three-point victory against Arkansas two Saturdays ago in a game that featured 104 total points and 1,343 total yards. Ole Miss had 706 of them. Donnie, there was not a prop bet you could have missed on Saturday night with 104 total points. The game total, 66.5, goes way over. Jackson Dart, the quarterback for Ole Miss, 389 yards, four touchdown tosses, 50 on the ground, and a fifth total touchdown as well. Jaden Daniels, the signal caller for the Bayou Bengals, sensational once again. 414 passing yards, four touchdowns, 99 yards on the ground, and a tud there as well. And Donnie, Quinshon Judkins came into the year, the Ole Miss running back, as the preseason favorite to win the Doak Walker Award that is given out to the best running back each and every season in college football. He had been wildly disappointing to start off this year. Four games where he hadn't even broken the 60-yard marker, but he said after the loss in Tuscaloosa two Saturdays ago, he wasn't truly healthy. He was starting to feel more like himself. How about 33 carries for a buck 77 and a touchdown as well? A workhorse on Saturday night. The victory for Ole Miss. Again, a huge victory for the Running Rebs, keeping them in conference conference consideration in the SEC. We'll see what the rest of the year holds for LSU, a two-loss team still ranked in the top 25. Donnie, you said this isn't the Big 12. Well, the Big 12 has a couple of teams that can play defense now, including the best team in the Big 12 so far, the third-ranked team in the country, the Texas Longhorns, limiting Kansas to only 14 points on Saturday in Austin, although KU played in the football game with a late scratch at the quarterback position. Dylan Daniels, one of the more dynamic signal callers in all of the country, Donnie, has been dealing with back tightness all year long. He wasn't out there for the Jayhawks in Austin on Saturday, but Texas still wins. 40-14, covering as a 16.5-point favorite.
Yeah, the assembly line of dominant backs looks like it's going to continue there in Texas. Brooks, 21 carries, 218 yards on the ground and two touchdowns. Just doing the math on there, a little bit over 10 yards per carry. The Texas Longhorns, like, nobody's joking right now that they're back, because why? They're here now. They're actually a legitimate football team with championship aspirations, and we're no longer laughing as if the bottom is going to fall out. The sky is the limit, and you're right. If you're that efficient on offense and playing that good on defense, good things are going to happen. And also, shout out Quinn Ewers in this game. 325 in the air, one touchdown pass, but holding off Arch Manning. We thought Arch Manning was going to be leaving the Texas Longhorns, but not the case here. Watch out for Texas the rest of the way. As I said again, they're here. They're not back.
Donnie, as I said, entering this season, if Arch Manning sees the football field, unless Texas is up by 70 points at some point in a game this year, it's a bad sign for the Longhorns in terms of truly being back. Quinn Ewers is the guy. He's always been billed as the guy, and he is playing like the guy right now for Texas. 348 yards in the incredibly impressive performance on the road in Tuscaloosa, week number two. He backed that up with 293 last week and a big victory for Texas on the road in Baylor. 325 on Saturday against Kansas. Also rushed for a touchdown for the fourth time in five games for Texas, who is number three in the country. A perfect, unbeaten 5-0. Oklahoma, a perfect, unbeaten 5-0. Ranked 12th in all of the land at the Texas State Fair, the Cotton Bowl in Dallas this upcoming Saturday, DRS. It's a Red River Showdown between the Longhorns and the Sooners. The first time both of these bitter rivals have been undefeated entering the Red River Showdown, DRS, since 2011. The Longhorns, a 5.5-point favorite.
How about this? Big Tech's going to overlook that football game here, and we should get it. One of the true, by the way, if most people don't know the history of this, right? It's played every single year at the Texas State Fair. The thing I love about this, Ben, is the fact that they split the stadium exactly half. You know, the burnt orange and the crimson red out there. It's fantastic stuff to watch it play out. And so many years in the past, I'm talking about the early 2000s, this game led up to national champions who won this football game, particularly Oklahoma, many, many times here. But when we take a look at this game, I can't wait. It's going to be a great one to watch in the pageantry sensation. Because it is tradition.
Right now, Texas -130 to win the Big 12. Oklahoma, the second best price at +200. We'll continue to look at college football around the country, DRS, but Notre Dame keeping their season afloat. Oof. In the final few minutes in Wallace Wade. As Donnie told you on Friday, it is not easy to go into Wallace Wade and get a victory. I don't think that's the right score. 21-14 was the final for the Fighting Irish over the Blue Devils. We'll figure it out, DRS. Up next here on TEL.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A top 20 showdown in Durham, North Carolina on Saturday night continues our review of week number five around college football. Notre Dame, DRS, in the final 2 minutes of the football game has a 10-play, 95-yard drive where Sam Hartman runs for a first down, Donnie, with a 17-yard run on 4th-and-16 to keep the game alive. And Notre Dame escapes Wallace Wade and the Blue Devils with a 21-14 victory. They go for two after a late touchdown from Audric Estime with 31 seconds as well, DRS, and they get the two-point conversion to cover as a 5.5-point favorite, handing Duke its first loss of the year. The Irish improved to 5-1. Everything's still out in front for Notre Dame, now ranked 10th in the country.
It would have been really interesting from a Duke perspective had they won this football game and have two, you know, marquee wins over Clemson and Notre Dame, and to see how they would probably fare in the ACC down the line. But let's not question here the fight in Sam Hartman. How about on that final drive, which, first of all, I couldn't even believe that they were having to come from behind, talking about Notre Dame after being dominant in the first half, pitching a shutout on defense in full control, basically saying in the second half, you guys got to score two touchdowns to beat us. And Duke actually did that to get to that 14th point, but also lining it up. You have a 17-yard run on, I believe it was, what, 4th and 16, 4th and 15, where he pulls up to the line, and you're saying to yourself, you got to throw the football. You can't just run around out here. And he made that split-second decision to go, you know what? I'm going to take off to see if I can get it. Goes airborne, gets the first down. At that moment, you knew Notre Dame was going to win the football game. And also, so many penalties, so many problems in the fourth quarter for Notre Dame, from odd targeting calls to overturn punts at the one-yard line. They fought against adversity here, and it's nice to have a quarterback that didn't buckle under the pressure. You take a look at his game, Ben. 222 in the air, no touchdowns, no interceptions. Pedestrian numbers, technically, for Hartman. But you think he cares about that? No. Celebrating at the end of the football game, doing the interviews, and also waiting over there for Riley Leonard to get out of the blue tent here just to check on his health. Class guy all the way around. This is your leader here at Notre Dame, and your season is now officially saved.
All class by Sam Hartman. We wish Riley Leonard the best, who was injured late in the game as Duke tried to rally in the final 31 seconds of regulation. And Riley Leonard has been sensational this year for Duke. 18 carries, 88 yards from the quarterback for the Blue Devils. He had 98 yards on the ground in the upset victory over Clemson week number one. It does not get any easier, DRS, for the Fighting Irish. They're on the road in Louisville this upcoming Saturday night. The Cardinals now ranked top 25 in the country. Louisville, a perfect 5-0. Then the weekend after that for Notre Dame, back to South Bend where they host USC. Donnie, we'll talk about the Trojans here because they did win 48-41 in Boulder on Saturday against Colorado. We knew the game was going to maybe lack some luster from a competitive standpoint, a 21.5-point spread in favor of USC, but there would be tons of attention and notoriety on this football game. Caleb Williams delivered. USC led 48-21 late in the third quarter. Caleb threw for 403 yards, six touchdowns, tying a career high. But yet again, Donnie, we thought Colorado might be able to stay in this football game, not because of what the offense would do for USC, but what the Buffs offense would be able to do. They scored 41 points against a USC defense that is still struggling mightily, DRS, and find somebody in your life that is as loyal to you as Lincoln Riley is to Alex Grinch, and for a second consecutive year and many seasons prior to that, dating back to their time together working in Norman, Oklahoma, that defense that has serious issues, DRS, might hold USC and Caleb Williams back from true contention for a Pac-12 championship or a spot in the college football playoff.
Yeah, you're not supposed to do this and equate like different games to different scenarios, right? And the reason I'm talking about this, 48-41 final, you say, well, Donnie, you know, Colorado scores on everybody and runs it up, even elite competition. That's not the case. They didn't do anything against the Oregon Ducks here. So it's impressive that the bounce back on offense for Colorado was made, but also as equally not impressive was USC giving up those 41-plus points. But there is a little silver lining when you take a look at it, though, Ben. I think we could both agree. You take a look at this game overall and say, USC did have that big lead. It was a late comeback for Colorado, a little for cosmetic purposes on that final score. But cosmetic purposes or not, you're going to look at this in 5 years and go, man, I can't believe they gave up 41 points here to Colorado, because that's actually statistically what you did. And also, you almost gave up 600 yards of offense to Colorado here. That's not elite from a defense. You got an elite offense. We know that in SC. But you're not going to win a championship if you're going to get into shootouts every week. Eventually, it's going to catch up to you.
Shedeur Sanders was good. DRS, 30 of 45, 371 yards, four touchdowns, albeit an interception. Also ran one in from 25 yards out. And that was for a buff offense, DRS, that entered this weekend as the worst rushing offense in the country, only averaging about 55 yards per game. They ran it on USC, who gave up 136, entering the second worst rushing defense in the Pac-12, for 193 yards, 564 total yards put up by Colorado. Oregon held the Buffs to less than 200 yards the week prior and only 6 points in Autzen. Don't tell me it's Folsom Field and the altitude that was the difference. Oregon is one of the best defenses in the Pac-12. USC is one of the worst, and that is the difference right now. That should be one of the overarching takeaways instead of the overall outcome, 48-41 for USC, the Buffs covering as a 21.5 point favorite. But because of the victory and the big day with all the eyeballs, DRS, 30 of 40, 403 yards, six touchdowns for Caleb Williams, again, tying a career high. He has become the solo favorite once more to win the Heisman Trophy, a plus 170 price, over $2 in front of Michael Penix Jr., the signal caller for Washington.
Yeah, let's get Michael Penix Jr. up there. But again, you got to have one of those marquee wins and signature moments here, and he'll move up that ladder. Yeah. But also, I think we can agree, a lot of this Heisman Trophy race is going to be tied to your football team as a whole here. Caleb Williams is going to win the Heisman if this team doesn't make the Pac-12 championship or make it into the college football playoff, because other guys behind him will play good football and make it into the playoffs to get that sort of bonus boost here. So if you're looking from a total team perspective for Caleb, he might have to lean on his defense a little bit more here, because if they lose a game, even if he throws for 475 yards, that's going to hurt him in the Heisman race.
No doubt, DRS. I actually thought Caleb Williams does have a path to winning a second consecutive Heisman Trophy for only the second time in the nearly century history of this award. And that's because USC, team-wise, could have higher success than they did last year. That defense scares me. We'll talk about it in just a little bit. You know what also scares me? Georgia's inability to cover numbers, DRS, and start football games strong. The Bulldogs survive on the road in the Deep South's oldest rivalry, on the plains in Auburn against the Tigers, 27-20. But they came nowhere close to covering as a two-touchdown favorite, 14.5 points. And Donnie, UGA was down 10-0 after the first quarter. It was tied 10-all at the break, and a fumble on the opening offensive play of the second half for the Bulldogs and Carson Beck. And the Tigers had a 17-10 lead. Donnie, Georgia is 5-0 straight up, but they are now 0-5 against the number. There are some serious issues plaguing this Georgia team in terms of their outlook of winning three consecutive national championships.
Yeah, and by the way, some big catches by the real baby Gronk on Saturday, which is Brock Bowers. 8 for 157 and a touchdown. One-handed catches, doing it in traffic, running away from the defense. That's how it's done. And by the way, come on, Auburn. I mean, open up that offense. 88 yards passing here. You want to beat an SEC team. You at least throw for 100 yards to try to put yourself in the best possible position. But credit Georgia. Yes, they did win, and I understand how Kirby Smart's going to go. It's really hard to win on the road anywhere you go. Stop the madness. You're number one. Yeah. Just don't put these football teams away.
The sixth consecutive game for Auburn against a Power 5 opponent. They have not eclipsed the 100-yard mark in terms of team total passing, but they made it a game until Brock Bowers had a 40-yard touchdown grab from Carson Beck with 2 minutes and 52 seconds remaining. Alabama goes into Starkville, a 40-17 victory, DRS, for the Crimson Tide on Saturday night, covering as a 14.5 point favorite. The SEC at the moment is setting up like Georgia and Alabama, with everything else shaking out elsewhere. More on the early line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We're live right here on a Monday on the early line on Sports Grid, looking back on the weekend that was in the world of sports. And Donnie, there's a lot to choose from in our weekend winners and losers. We had so much action across the sports landscape this weekend. Of course, NFL week number 4 and the Sunday slate. College football week number 5. A Ryder Cup, the end of the Major League Baseball regular season with October now set up. The WNBA finals are set as well. The super team era in the W. So DRS, with all of that in mind, who is your first weekend winner?
And by the way, before I say that, and credit me, because nobody predicted that the Liberty and the Aces would meet in the WNBA championship here but me. So I want to get that off my chest here. But let's get to the winners here. And I guess the WNBA technically should be one of those winners, but we're not going to go there right now.
It should
be. Number winner is Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey is absolutely dominating for the San Francisco 49ers. Some would say that they are playing the best football out of any franchise in the NFL, one of only two unbeaten teams left with the Philadelphia Eagles. He was sensational yesterday, and quite frankly, Ben, he has been absolutely a rock star since going from Carolina to go over to the San Francisco 49ers. A match made in heaven. When you talk about before getting Christian McCaffrey, hitting home runs on offense in the running game, that's Kyle Shanahan's special here. And to get the best running back in order to do that, and he's completely shining. And shout out the fact that we were thinking about coming into the season with a 50-50 backfield split between Eli Mitchell and Christian McCaffrey. He's doing historic things. He's running wild. The 49ers are good. And by the way, 25-1 in the MVP race. Show the man some respect here. He's my winner of the week here, number one.
I would agree, DRS. Christian McCaffrey does things with the football that really nobody else in the sport can do. He makes plays out of nothing at times, and currently he has a nose for the end zone. A 13-game streak of scoring at least one touchdown, where he has 17 touchdowns in that span. 4 yesterday, 3 on the ground, 1 receiving score as well, and 177 yards from scrimmage as well. DRS, my number one winner of the weekend, the Buffalo Bills. Buffalo made a statement yesterday at home, 48-20, the victory in Orchard Park, covering easily as a 3-point favorite and knocking off the Dolphins, handing Miami its first loss of the year. There are no longer any unbeaten sides left in the AFC. And Donnie, I thought the game was going to be closer than that 28-point margin ended up being. It wasn't. I didn't really think a team would be able to make a statement quite like we saw yesterday in Buffalo. But one thing we knew for certain entering this weekend in the marquee matchup, week number 4, is that the winner of the football game was going to see a drastic odds movement based on the result. And Buffalo now is the odds-on favorite to win the AFC East at minus 120. Buffalo now has the second best price at a 4-1 clip, only $1.20 behind the Kansas City Chiefs to win the AFC Championship. Buffalo did make that statement, DRS, and I know you feel pretty similar.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. The winner number 2 for the week is the Buffalo Bills, reemerging here, right, as that Super Bowl contender that we thought they would be coming through that first game. Also, I brought this up yesterday on Pro Football Today, which I think is a pretty good topic. Yeah. What happens if the Buffalo Bills squeak out an overtime victory against the Jets in week number 1? Are they not just the outright favorite to win it all by a wide margin at this point? It's crazy how one game can change your thought process. But as we know, coming into the season, the toughest games to gauge are weeks 1 and weeks 2 and what type of football team you are going to have. The Buffalo Bills are hitting on all cylinders in an absolute must-win game. They provided everything you needed, which included, okay, deep breath. Yes, exhale. Look at that. Josh Allen, he's actually a really good quarterback. My secondary winner of the week, that's the Buffalo Bills, absolutely.
Completely agree. And Donnie, that's been the biggest change. And I think Josh Allen took it personally, right? After that Monday night football opener against New York, he said himself, you never want to be the reason. You never want to be the reason why your team loses a game. And he said that night he felt like the reason. 3 interceptions, a costly fumble late in the fourth quarter as well, as Buffalo squandered a divisional win potentially against the New York Jets. And that's why yesterday was so important. Not just a showdown against the last remaining unbeaten team entering the weekend in the AFC, but the second divisional game that if Buffalo had lost, they would have been winless 0-2. Now they're 1-1, as is Miami. Everything is out there in front of it for the Bills. And Josh Allen has only had one turnover in the last three games. He has played much cleaner football, Donnie, and we see it in the results. My second winner of the weekend is the rookie quarterback, C.J. Stroud. DRS, throughout the draft process, it happened once again. People said because C.J. Stroud's Wonderlic test was bad or this or that or whatever the reason was, he was going to slide. He wasn't the second best quarterback. I said malarkey. It is malarkey. C.J. Stroud is off to a historic start in his NFL career. When you look at the numbers, DRS, yesterday, 16 of 30, 306 yards, two touchdowns against Pittsburgh. He has six touchdowns, zero interceptions through his first four NFL career starts. The Houston Texans are 2-2. They hammered the Steelers at home yesterday, 30-6. And C.J. Stroud, DRS, has accumulated 1,212 passing yards to start this season. That is the second most in NFL history for a quarterback in his first four games, only behind Cam Newton. He has also thrown the football 151 times and, again, has not turned it over. No interceptions yet. That is also one of the longest streaks in the NFL to start off a career of playing clean football. C.J. Stroud, now the favorite to win the Offensive Rookie of the Year at plus 175, has by far been, Donnie, the most impressive rookie quarterback, more than Bryce Young, more than Anthony Richardson. And he said after the game, "I want the entire city of Houston and all the Texans fans out there to walk with your head held high when you talk about having your favorite team." And he is proving that for the Texans this year, Donnie. A sensational start to the NFL season and career of C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, and also you think they made the right coaching move there with DeMeco Ryans. That team is playing hard week in and week out. And keep in mind, they had basically Baltimore on the ropes for a good portion of that game to open the season. So really good football being played all the way around and maybe breaking that stereotype as opposed to yesterday where Fields actually showed a pulse where, yes, look at this, talented quarterbacks from Ohio State can actually perform well in the NFL. And we're but by the way, Ben, just to double down on C.J. Stroud, I didn't see this coming this early in his career of how good he would be, primarily not because of him, but where are his weapons at? He's making weapons all over the place because why? He's putting the football in places they can catch and make big plays with them. I'm equally impressed by that as well. Winner number three for me on the week. Let's keep it in the quarterback realm. Not in the professional standings, but in the college football rankings here. Sam Hartman, just told you about his statistics. They were quite pedestrian in that game, but when you have a leader there that wills you to a victory, which includes a 15-yard scramble on 4th and 15 to get that first down here and enable yourself with a chance to win that football game, I thought that was massive. A season-saving play by a very good football player, Sam Hartman. He gets my winner of the week on Saturday night because, again, Donnie, he beat Duke. Duke is a ranked team that you were playing in their building in a packed stadium going wild where you had to come up big on your last drive, and you did. I love to see it. Sam Hartman, winner number three for me.
You needed it, DRS. You needed it, and Sam Hartman delivered, and that's where things stand for Notre Dame. That's why you get Sam Hartman in the transfer portal. That's why you bring him to the stage that is South Bend and being the quarterback of the Golden Domers, and he proved that in a crucial spot late in that football game against Duke. Elsewhere, DRS, my winner of the weekend, my final of the three, Shane Lowry, the guy for Team Europe this weekend. A European leader, DRS, on that Ryder Cup team who is as boisterous and fun as you will find. He and Tommy Fleetwood almost at the same time clinched the Ryder Cup for Team Europe. And there was a video going around of Shane Lowry, just how excited he is going to be. The pints of Guinness that are flowing for the Irishman as they won the Ryder Cup yesterday. He is probably wildly hungover, if that's even a thing he can get on this Monday morning. But there was a video, Donnie, where there was a marshal telling the crowd to be quiet, be quiet. Shane Lowry was chipping yesterday in a crucial spot. He turned around to the marshal and said, "You're being as loud as effing anybody else here. Stop making so much noise." He's a man of the people and a huge reason that Europe won the Ryder Cup, the fifth time in the last six Ryder Cups for Team Europe, and they have held off the Americans on home soil dating back for the last three decades since 1993. The winners are fun, Donnie. We remain optimistic, but now let's get into it, really. Who are some of your losers of this weekend?
Let me peel through. The Bengals for number one because their season is done. Mac Jones, who's a terrible quarterback, is two. The reason why I sped through the first two because I actually wanted to get to number three on Ron Rivera and the dumbbell he is for yesterday. And thank goodness I'm an Eagles fan that he coaches for the Commanders. Some would say he should be a winner because of how close they were and fought through overtime. No. go for two at the end of the football game. And Ron Rivera's example excuse in the postgame press conference, we were tired on offense. Have you heard any coach in the history of professional football or college football, when you have a long drive, no, the defense is out of gas, you idiot. Not the offense. They're pressing it down. You had one play to win a football game in Philadelphia, and you went to overtime and lost because you're an idiot, because you have the exact opposite philosophy you're supposed to have. There, I said it. Ron Rivera, you idiots.
Riverboat Ron, that's what he's known as, for taking risks, for taking gambles. But the last few years, Donnie, he has said some things that even if the action had already happened, you probably just don't say afterward. Week 17, a season ago in the National Football League, admitting he didn't know it was an elimination game for his Commanders' side. Donnie, I think at the end of this year, if things continue to peel the way they are for the Commanders, who have been better, by the way, 2-2 this year, off to a 2-0 start, have lost the last 2 weeks, but of course, yesterday in Philly, much more competitive than we thought the 8.5-point spread would be for that football game against the Eagles. But if things continue to go bad for Washington, as there's a new horizon, some new life in that organization, I think Riverboat Ron Rivera, might see a different path moving forward than being the head coach for that Washington organization. We're going to need a little time on the other side of the break for my losers, Donnie, because I agree with you. The Bengals are certainly there, and that pains me, a team I predicted to win the Super Bowl, but at 1-3 and looking lifeless, only 5 offensive touchdowns with an injured quarterback and a team that seems fractured at the moment, we're going to need a little bit of time to finish out our weekend losers before we preview Monday Night Football. That's coming your way next on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, we got to finish with some heat. We got to finish with a few weekend losers around this past weekend in the world of sports before we set up the final game of week number 4, Monday night in MetLife between the New York Giants and the Seattle Seahawks. DRS, I'm going to try to not have my neck veins or my forehead vein pop out and rupture here so that you don't have to spend the final hour plus by yourself. But my number one loser is Matt Eberflus. I think he is the number one loser in all the National Football League. Let's just start with yesterday. The decision to line up on 4th-and-1 deep in Broncos territory to try to draw them offsides, to burn a crucial timeout in a critical juncture that at bare minimum would be a 1-score game, to then line back up. Donnie, I'm watching my TV and I'm saying to myself, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why? What in the world would you ever send your team back out there if you're going to go for it on 4th down and not kick the field goal that could possibly be the points that you need to be the winning margin to win the football game? That's in that one moment. Of course, they go for it on 4th down. The execution is not there. Denver takes over. The Broncos drive the length of the field. They kick a field goal to get their first win. Sean Payton looked like the worst coach in the National Football League yesterday until Matt Eberflus said, hey, pal, I got you. Don't worry. Matt Eberflus, a defensive mind, Donnie, that was hired by Chicago to restore the defensive power of the Monsters of the Midway. A defensive mind that has now seen his Chicago team lose 14 consecutive games. A defensive mind, Donnie, that in all 14 of those consecutive losses, the Bears have given up 25 or more points, and you can't play him Allen Williams anymore. He's the guy orchestrating the defense. Donnie, that is an NFL first. History in a bad way made yesterday at Soldier Field. The Bears are the first team in NFL history to allow their opponents to score at least 25 points in 14 consecutive games. And Matt Eberflus is at bare minimum, Donnie, at the core of his character, supposed to be a defensive guy. He is anything but. And you wasted Justin Fields' first 300-yard performance, where entering the fourth quarter, Donnie, he was 23 of 24 for over or close to 300 yards, ended with 335. Justin Fields a couple of weeks ago got flacked, Donnie, for saying could be coaching. When asked why he has been robotic and not playing like himself, we pointed fingers at Justin Fields and said, hey, doesn't matter if it's the truth. The quarterback of an organization can't say that. Nope. Justin Fields was spot on. Justin Fields was 100% correct. Matt Eberflus needs to get as far away from the Windy City as quickly as he can, Donnie.
Yeah, and also, when he was originally hired by the Chicago Bears, most didn't even know he was even an NFL coach or where he even came from, which made it that much more yep. puzzling. And also, you're saying to yourself, I have a young, dynamic quarterback I'm trying to mold into an NFL franchise quarterback. Let's hire a defensive coordinator. So some might say, okay, well, defensive coordinator, and maybe they'll just hold it down, and you get a young offensive mind. That's not the way the NFL works here. You're supposed to get the head coach who's an offensive guy because he's not going to leave when his offense is really good and forcing you to get another coordinator to run the offense here. It's been a disaster all the way around, but isn't that what the Chicago Bears are? Notoriously cheap for the past 30 to 40 years in spending in the offseason. Notoriously yep. cheap here with their home field where they bicker with the city. We're not going to pay for a new field surface, even though it's a terrible one year to year. And also, like, let's just keep on ripping the Bears here, who 25 years ago or 20 years ago did the remodeling of Soldier Field and botched it so bad. Like, why did we build it so small? I don't know. You picked it to be that small. So now you need a new field on top of it. Yeah, Justin Fields going, I wish I played in a dome in Chicago, which is like against the grain for everything they believe in. Everything under Matt Eberflus and the McCaskies has been an absolute disaster for at least the decade here. And is it going to get done anytime sooner or better? I don't think so. I like where you went there.
And Donnie, they're one of the families of football, right? One of those first families, the McCaskies. Well, they have run this organization into the ground. One of my best friends in the world, his name is Luke Lamble, a boy from Chicago, Illinois. He sent a text yesterday to his Bears. Yeah, you do know him really well, DRS. He sent a text to his Bears group chat yesterday that said, a reminder, things could always be worse as the Broncos started to make their comeback. And then he emphasized his own text to his Bears group chat. He has told me many a time, how can you expect any different results when it's still the McCaskies running this organization like it's a family business and one of the worst in the National Football League that is a billion-dollar revenue industry, all that comes with it. And I'll just finish with my final loser of the weekend, DRS. It's the USC Trojans. Ben, what? They're perfect. They're 5-0. They're a top 10 team. They just beat Colorado by scoring 48 points on the road. Yeah, they allowed 41 and 564 yards of total offense. Donnie, there's a chance Caleb Williams finds his way to Chicago next year. He better hope Matt Eberflus is not the head coach. And there might be a chance, Donnie, realistically, that Caleb Williams could win two consecutive Heisman trophies for only the second time this award has been handed out since the early 1930s. And there's a chance that Caleb Williams and USC might not win a Pac-12 championship in either of those years or play in the college football playoff in either of those years because of the defense, because of Alex Grinch, because of the lack of adjustments year over year, game over game. It has held Lincoln Riley-led teams back in years past, dating to their time together with the Sooners in Oklahoma in Norman. It held USC back a year ago, losing in the Pac-12 championship game to Utah, squandering an opportunity in the Cotton Bowl against Tulane. It is going to hold back the Trojans team, DRS, unless something magically changes for USC, and I don't see that being the case, at least at this juncture. All right. Whew. Let's calm down the heart rates. Let's look forward to the finale of week number 4. Monday Night Football, tonight DRS in MetLife between the Seahawks and the Giants. The second time in this opening month, Donnie, we've seen Sunday Night Football at MetLife with a New York team to Monday Night Football at MetLife, but this time we flip it. The Jets were on last night. It's the Giants tonight hosting the Seahawks. Seattle, Donnie, a slight, and I mean very slight, point and a half favorite, minus 126 on the money line. The over-under stands at 47.5.
It sounds about right there as the favorite here for the Seattle Seahawks, because last time we saw, you know, New York, it wasn't all that pretty here. And also, they needed a massive comeback just to beat the Arizona Cardinals. But having said that, the healthier team probably coming into tonight, even if Saquon Barkley doesn't give it a go, is probably the New York Giants here. And again, the Giants look to be without their superstar left tackle and Andrew Thomas. But there are so many guys beat up and banged up on that Seattle team, which includes their secondary, where there's no excuse for Daniel Jones not to have a solid night. Do I love his weapons at tight end and wide receiver? No, I don't. I'm waiting for Darren Waller, the old Darren Waller, to show up that I saw in Las Vegas for so many years, that can be electric and stretch the field and have very good hands here. He hasn't shown up yet here. Neither have the wide receivers. And also, is Matt Breida going to have a big night tonight? I look for Daniel Jones to be a catalyst tonight, whether it be passing, touchdowns passing, and or running with his feet tonight as the pathway towards victory. I don't know if I'm going to go ahead and say, you know what, the Giants can absolutely win this game. And again, we're not talking about a 7.5 or 10.5 point line. Monday Night Football with a little bit more of an extended break because you played on that Thursday night. The Giants should win this game, but I don't think they actually win it here. And as banged up as Seattle is, I think that Seattle offense should be able to move the football, and I would rely on Geno Smith here.
Yeah, the Seattle Seahawks DRS, a top five scoring unit in the National Football League so far, but a bottom five scoring defense, giving up 29.3 points per game. The Giants, worse than that. The third worst scoring defense, giving up nearly 33 points per game. I think, Donnie, if you're looking for optimism for Big Blue, after watching the last time we saw New York on the field Thursday night, 2 weeks ago against San Francisco in Santa Clara, it's that that was a short week. They stayed out on the West Coast. Now they've had 11 days to prepare for the lack of Saquon Barkley for a patchworked offensive line. But the last time we saw the Giants out there, boy, was it bad, Donnie. It was really, really bad. Daniel Jones now has a 1-11 record in primetime games. Danny Dimes is 0-6. Winless on Monday Night Football. And Daniel Jones' props tonight, 220.5 through the air, 35.5 on the ground. The last time we saw New York, Donnie, again, short week against a really good defense in San Francisco, which Seattle is not, but he was 22 of 33 for 137 yards, threw an interception. New York is a team, Donnie, had 11 carries for only 29 yards, not really helping out their signal caller, but Daniel Jones only ran it for 5 yards on the ground. So I don't have a ton of optimism offensively, Donnie, for Big Blue entering tonight, even against a Seahawks defense that is allowing more than 29 points per game.
Yeah, and that's the issue, right? Because as we took a look at that practice report here and the doubtfuls and the guys that are out that missed practice last week, there's a lot of them in that secondary, which means you should be able to take advantage of that. But just because you should be able to doesn't mean you actually can. Because, again, we're looking at the wide receivers, Slayton, Campbell, Hodgkins, Waller. I mean, it's not very good on the outside. And also, you don't have that game breaker in the backfield as if, let's just say, if we were going to get a Saquon Barkley appearance tonight, we know he's not 100% healthy. It could be a game changer going up against Seattle, which makes their safeties and their linebackers pay more attention to him. The read option with Daniel Jones would work. The play action pass with Daniel Jones would get some guys open. It's just going to be an uphill battle, it seems like, throughout the season. And at the beginning of it, I took over 17.5 touchdown passes for Daniel Jones. Hopefully, he can stay out there long enough to throw at least one or two tonight. But it's hard for me to say, even though it's a Monday night football game with extra rest, that I'm confident that the Giants can actually win this football game. Yeah. I'm not here. The one thing, again, I'm confident about is I do think that offense should be able to move the football for Seattle, and you hang your hat there.
Yeah, certainly so. And the offense, of course, for Seattle, led by Geno Smith, the comeback player of the year last year in the National Football League, coming back from his time spent in the Giants and the Jets organizations. Now he's the starter in Seattle. 249.5 DRS is the passing yards prop for Geno Smith. That if you throw out the Rams game, and it was a very uncharacteristic game for Seattle, Geno Smith threw for 296 last week, a touchdown and an interception against Carolina. The week prior in Detroit on the road, 32 of 41, 328 yards and two touchdown tosses. If we expect offense, Donnie, doesn't 249.5 for Geno Smith seem a little bit light?
It does seem a little bit late because you figure that's the way they're going to attack them. And also, here's the one thing, Ben, you're taking a look at, because one hand washes the other. If you can tell me right now that Daniel Jones would be competent, throw for 240 yards, a touchdown pass or two, and move the football, I would love that statistic for Geno Smith. But I don't know if the Giants' MO in this game is going to be like, hey, guys, protect the football. Let's go real slow and we'll drown this game out. That's what I'm having to worry, which I'm actually leaning towards the under in that spot when you never should be. Both of these teams should be able to get after, but I just keep getting back to the Giants' MO. What are the Giants going to do well tonight? What would shock you more? Daniel Jones, $175 in the air or $325 in the air? I'd be like, man, I'd be shocked if he threw for the $325, not the $175. Yeah. That's where I sit at this moment here. We should have an offensive game, but I don't think it gets there because why? I don't think the Giants' offense is all that good.
Yeah, and let's keep an eye on what Seattle, of course, will bring offensively. DK Metcalf, 64.5. Tyler Lockett, 52.5. They're receiving yards numbers tonight. But keep an eye on Kenneth Walker III, the second-year pro out of Michigan State and Wake Forest. New York has the fifth-worst rushing defense in the NFL, Donnie, giving up 138 yards per game. Every leading rusher that New York has played this year, Tony Pollard, James Conner, Christian McCaffrey, nearly Elijah Mitchell, all went over this number of 64.5, a number the K9 has gone over in two of the last three games. 18 carries, 97 yards, two touchdowns last week against Carolina. Donnie, quickly here on these two teams. Seattle, a playoff team a year ago, as was New York, but neither favor to get into the postseason this time around.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see what happens in this game as it pops up here. But I'm not expecting big things out of the Giants the rest of the way. I just don't think their offense is very good. But Seattle does have a chance here. They really do. We'll see if they put it together. Two straight wins here. Let's see if they can make it three in a row and get some of the momentum. And also, just like the Baltimore Ravens, just get healthy the rest of the way, Ben.
Certainly so. We round out this second hour of the Early Line up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Rounding out this second hour of the Early Line live right here on this Monday on Sports Grid. He's Donnie Wrightside. I'm Ben Stevens. This is the new Sports Grid app, the ultimate sports betting companion app, now available for download. Scan that QR code on your screen, and in a matter of moments, all of our information and insight in the palm of your hand. DRS, we touched on it on the top of the show today. A monumental trade in the NBA yesterday as football was starting. Drew Holiday, who was a part of the trade that sent Damian Lillard from Portland to Milwaukee last week. Well, Drew Holiday in Portland was short-lived. The Blazers shopping him to the Celtics yesterday. So now we have co-favorites to win an NBA championship. Boston and Milwaukee, a key piece for the Seas. What does it do for the public outlook, DRS? As we'll break it down right here and fade the public. At SportsGrid TV on Twitter, re-poll alert, who was the best team in the NBA? Donnie, it's the same question we asked last week after the trade that sent Dame to the Bucks. The Bucks, Celtics, Nuggets, and Suns, the four best prices to win an NBA championship. Who was the best team in the league? Donnie, it feels as though the public has had a couple of days to let it all settle in. They're going with Dame and Giannis in Milwaukee, nearly 40% of the vote.
Yeah, I can see that here, but I'm going with the team with the best starting lineup overall in the NBA, and that's the Phoenix Suns, only getting 8.5. I guarantee. I saw they collapsed at the end of the season against Denver last year. I get that. Ran out of gas. Their bench is going to be better this year. Another year to acclimate superstars all over the place. Give me the Suns here. I can't believe the Suns are coming in last play. Come on, man. We're really betting on the Nuggets, Celtics, and Bucks. Well, I guess you can, but Suns for me.
They were in last.
Contrarian value bet. Yeah. Suns.
I mean, you're fading the public, DRS, as you were last week. The Suns had the least amount of the vote, but at 11%. Now it's only 8.5%. We'll talk about some fade the public market movement, and we'll talk about the NBA championship odds on the move as well to determine who the best team in the association is as the regular season starts in just a few weeks. Hour three, next.